This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Nancy Guthrie notes. Oh, yeah, there's a big pile of them. And are you as confused as I am by them? We're going to try and make some sense of everything we've been hearing this week, from this source, that source, the other source, the source of the source of that source to the next source. Let's talk about the notes, because there isn't just one. There's a pile and they don't agree. One supposedly came from the kidnapper and says Nancy's buried with nature. A completely different guy is telling TMZ that time is no longer of the essence. An outlet says the killer apologized. Another says they never did. That's where we're at. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is here to help us untangle it, along with retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreek to help us untangle it as well. So we have two FBI people that are retired FBI people on the road in various secretive locations that we won't reveal. So I think this is great because, you know, Megan had the one person on that said they're 75% there, and then somebody else is like, no, not at all. Let's see where we go here. Jen, you follow this closer, I think, than anybody I know. Untangle this twisted web of notes, and did they apologize? Did they not apologize? What conclusions have you come to this week?
Well, I tell you what, Tony and Robin, this is the thing. The whole source situation is out of control. I used to think it was one source for everyone, but now, because all the source information is different for everyone, now I know there must be four or five sources because they're all saying something else. So I finally got, at least on note two, down to the nitty gritty. Brianna Whitley, who was with a Arizona station and saw the note, she came out and told us very specifically about the second note. So I at least feel confident that the second note, and I don't think she'd lie, really watched for tells with that. She has no reason to lie. She's not with the station anymore. So she can say whatever she wants. And so finally we have, I think, the truth, not from a source, but from the person who read it with their own eyes.
Because she's with Crime Junkie now, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And she was with, was it K-Gun or the other one? One of the other TV stations in Tucson.
I thought it was
Tucson.
The Phoenix station.
Okay. So she was in the close to the market there. What's in this note too? Let's start there. That the one that she talked about, and why do we think there's legitimacy to note number two?
So based on the FBI's responses, BAU's response, having five different times that the family, which was clearly driven by notes, they're looking down, addressed the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. To me, it's clear that the Bureau and Pima County Sheriff's Office believed these were real. They even did a press conference on it. They discussed how there were things in the notes that no one else could know, one of them being her clothing. I know a lot of people say, yeah, but was the crime scene really secure? Could somebody have picked out the, you know, the floodlight? Well, how did they know about her, what was on her nightstand? How did they know what she was dressed in? So I think that's why the Bureau ran full force, that they believed the notes. Both of these notes are the two that they believe. And secondarily, Savannah said on national television, she believes these two notes are real.
Mm-hmm. So note one from this same person who would have given note number two, note one would have been the one that said what?
So all we know in note one is, and what's recently come out, is that they said, Savannah, we have your mother, or words to that effect. I don't have my notes in front of me, but sure. that was addressed directly to Savannah. And that's where they said, basically $4 million and it's going to go up after that, or else we're going to kill your mom. But we haven't seen, and she didn't tell us, meaning Brianna, we don't know, other than from source information, what's in that note. The first one.
Sure. So that's note one, essentially what the basis of what we understand is, we have your mom. We want $4 million in Bitcoin. Is that essentially as accurate as we can be on that? And then note two came from the same source, the same place that note one came from. So that's how those two are connected. That's the one Brianna was talking about. And this one is the one that says she has passed away, correct?
Well, it says a lot more than that.
Okay, tell me that. Give me that, because there's so many stories on they apologize, they don't apologize. This version, this note that connects to note one, what's in this note that Brianna's talked about?
Well, specifically that she accidentally died, buried in nature. There was nothing you could have done to prevent the outcome. And sorry. Those are kind of the main pointers. There was an apology according to Brianna.
Okay. Robin, I know you got questions, so I want to ask one more quick one here.
Yeah, go ahead.
What, because we're hearing the other reporting out there of, are we talking about several different notes here when we hear the one saying that there's notes that came out that said she died, but there was not an apology? Is that a different note? Is that different people? And it's just kind of all in the minutiae here getting discombobulated and mixed in?
Well, it's interesting because TMZ says there was no apology. That's an exact quote from Harper.
Yeah,
there's no apology. But you hear Brianna said at the end, the salutation is, I'm sorry. So it's so confusing. So it made me wonder, did TMZ actually get a different note, different verbiage in their note than what Brianna got?
Or have they been able to connect that note to these notes, or the only two that we have a true connection to are the ones to the TV station, note one and note two that Brianna's talked about? Do we know if the TMZ note where Harvey says there was no apology is directly related? It's like just another version of the same note, or is that somebody completely different that somehow kind of got a whiff of, oh, they want to hear that she's dead, and maybe I can profit that way in some way, shape, or form?
My understanding is the first two sets of notes, no matter which station they went to, are seen as legitimate. And we kind of know that, right? Because we saw what the Guthries did after even the second note, after the sixth, right? That's when the other notes came in. But I'm not convinced that TMZ had the exact same verbiage in their second note. Mm-hmm. At least it doesn't make any sense to me that Harvey Levin says no apology. And Brianna specifically says at the very end, the salutation is, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if it's the same people or just two variations of the note. They apologized to the TV station and their note, and the one they sent to Harvey had no apology, but from the same person. I guess trying to determine if it's the same source is the question. And I know that we know the answer to that question yet. Robin, go ahead.
And I apologize if my connection has been a little spotty. The intent, that's what I'm not getting on this is, so, and I'm with you that BAU worked with Savannah and her family because that second message they put out was extremely empathetic in response to an assumption that they believe that second note, which is extremely empathetic, apologizing for the death. That is unheard of in anything. I mean, this whole thing's been unheard of. But if your intent is to get money, either through a wrench attack, through ransom, for any of these things, that is exactly what not to do. It has just never happened before by an individual or even groups. And Tony said he looked up one that there was one having to do with cartels, with it was an accidental, boo-boo hit that they're apologizing for. So not to start some sort of cartel war. But what do you think then is the link between or what their outcome that they're seeking? If they're apologizing for her dying, I just don't get it. I just makes no sense. Does it make any sense to you?
So this is my take on that. I really think that this was preemptive. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Oh, good.
I truly think this was preemptive. And when I say that, the only thing that makes sense to me is these individuals going, oh, crap, she died. We're going to get caught. It's death penalty in Arizona. We're going to act contrite. And this is all completely staged baloney. I don't think she's buried everyone. I think that the words in there, I think, are such nonsense. they tried to relay this empathetic message, and clearly that is what was received. We talked about this. Remember how BAU believed they must be, you know, have some sort of heart that they could get to? Because look at how they termed everything. So BAU clearly thinks that they were reachable in this empathetic way. But I think it's more sinister than that. I really was thinking about a case I had, and it made me shift thinking, you know what? This is about preparing for capture. And when we're caught, look, we didn't mean her to die. See, we wrote it right there. We feel terrible about it. See, we wrote it right there. We tried to tell the family this wasn't right, or her fault, their fault. So I see those notes as BS, to be honest, in terms of what they're saying. I don't think she was buried. I think they just hit her.
Yeah, so you're seen as preemptive in case they're caught, expecting to be caught, which is even more shocking than I haven't been caught yet. So that is literally the only explanation I can come up with on that one, too, if they're real. Again, I always go on the world of if until someone says otherwise. That's rough.
So the thinking is that of someone who's not experienced in doing something like this, clearly, if they're like writing apology notes, getting prepared to be caught. Well, we're sorry. I mean, that's not super common to have that take place. That's rather bizarre. So when we're trying, if these are the people, if these two notes we're talking about to the Tucson TV stations, we have her, we want $4 million, and now she's dead and we're sorry. The second "we're dead and she's dead and we're sorry" note, are they asking for money in that one too for the body, or is it just "she's dead, we're sorry, have a nice day"?
Yeah, she's dead, we're sorry, it's a big accident. I forgot to mention one more thing in that note. She said that they were not aware of how serious her health condition was, which I found very interesting. And they also mentioned a heart. They think it was a heart issue.
Yeah.
So they actually mention all of that in the note, which also says mope. If this is even true, you know, mope did not do their research, pointed in that direction and went for it.
So does this still support? Go ahead.
I was going to say, does that make you think that Nancy was the intended target here? Or is it like, shit, I'm still sticking with my theory that they went to the wrong house and Nancy ended up becoming collateral damage. But does that make you think that Nancy was the intended target here to get $4 million? Or did Nancy become the side hustle of, well, we didn't get what we came for, but we ended up with an old lady. Let's see what we can get for her.
I don't think so. I think she was 100% the intended target. Remember that first ransom note was addressed to Savannah. Savannah, we have your mother. So I think just the mentioning of her tells the pointer that they had to even focus on getting Nancy. Nancy was a soft target. Mm-hmm. Savannah was.
And you still think it's an organized wrench attack that involved multiple people or an organization that did it? Or is this more individual look to you? Any idea?
I'm definitely half and half. I can see it fitting that, because just like the last wrench attack before this, right, the day before, they got two teenagers to do this. I think it's potluck who you end up getting that wants to do these types of attacks, to be honest. But on the second side of it is, and again, another case that I worked reminded me so much of this, and it was a neighborhood case where high dollar, people living at $3, $4, $5, $10, $12 million homes, professional golfers, et cetera, they were being targeted for robberies. So they knew exactly when they were gone, et cetera, et cetera. And how it all came around was literally the person that ended up doing it wasn't even connected to the neighborhood, but they knew somebody that was. And so that person had talked about the wealth and all of this, and now it's being talked about around bad guys, and bad guys get together and say, oh, this is perfect. We're going to start hitting these places. So it made me wonder if they're what that it's tangential,
tangential.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. It just sounds weird. On the side like that. In other words, did they come on to Nancy because of something like that? A handy guy that worked with her that talked about it to somebody else. And then it finally gets to the criminal element cousin and his buddies, something like that. But I think either work. The one thing that I'm stronger than ever, though, about kidnap for ransom of Nancy targeted for sure now, because now we know the verbiage in there.
When we're trying to parse all of this together and try to figure out if this thing or where this goes and trying to figure out what is legitimate here, what is not legitimate here. Other than, you know, there seems to be a string, you know, one piece here, one piece there, that kind of connects over there. This kind of connects that kind of, we still haven't gotten to any sort of place where we know, the actual source of this. There's no proof of life. There's no proof they even had her. I mean, even like, not even just here's her body, something like, are you at all surprised that there's all this money on the table, and if somebody does have her or access to her or knows where she's buried, if that's like nobody's come forward in any way, shape or form to even attempt this to get the payout, whether that be somebody who's heard about this through leakage or somebody who might be able to garner some sort of a deal here of yes, I'm involved, but my involvement can also then lead you to this greater swath of people who are doing this to far more people, taking more down. What do you think is going on there in terms of who knows what and why no one has spoken yet, if this is beyond just a single mope or something?
Well, just putting, you know, myself in the place of a bad guy that has any involvement with this, all I can see is an electric chair in my future. So yeah. There's no chance I'm coming forward for any of it. And I know they say, oh, it's anonymous. No, the Bureau is in the business of making sure that somebody who did this is going to get $1.2 million. So, you know.
How do you think it is that they haven't been able to track down who sent these letters or have any leads on it or from at least from what we know?
Did you see what Howard Bloom said was very interesting? Again, all of his is source related, and his sources, whoever they are, told him they have the IP address, but that it is masked in some way. So we hadn't even heard that before. I had never heard an IP address even mentioned, anything like that was known. So that's again from Howard Bloom.
Well, wouldn't anybody have if you got an email, you have an IP address. Doesn't mean it's not through a VPN or something that's masked. I mean, but there would be an IP address that comes from an email. Otherwise, you're not getting that email.
No, I totally agree. What I couldn't figure out, well, what I'm hearing when I hear that is, in other words, if it's a Proton, you know, account from another country that you can't trace.
Yeah.
I thought, well, they might not even have an IP address, but my understanding, at least from what he's saying, is no, they have the address.
And it just doesn't lead.
Yeah, it ended up being a dead end. So, and the other thing is these portals that are intake portals, you know, I'm not 100% sure how that is. I need to do it, right? We need to reach out to Tucson and TMZ and their intake portal and see how that process works, because I've never done it. And that's where these notes came into. These weren't email to email. This was communication to portal.
Did you still think, and how many people, because again, I can't even imagine looking at mope porch guy being anywhere sophisticated enough to do anything like this. So you're still thinking there's at least one other person that might be the brains behind this, Jen?
I really do. And initially, no, it wasn't until those notes were legitimized by the outreach by the family. That's when I really said, wow, this is, it's organized, because look at what's happening. Look at the fact that they set up a Bitcoin account without being traced, which is harder than you might think. Secondarily, the IP address that can't be traced. Third, no one was able to get anything from that camera, almost as if they knew if they plucked that camera. I mean, it was really by the grace of God, 10 days later, that Google was able to unravel that. By the way, I am now pretty much leaning toward the fact that with him, with the holster and without the holster, is the same event.
Not two different days.
Same event.
Same. Yeah, right. Not two different days. Let me put it more clearly.
Yeah, because that was questioning first of like, is this, and how they don't know this, and how, again, this is, that's a little nugget of information. It's like, how do you not know that based on the metadata of the video? I mean, I would think authorities know that. Why they wouldn't just tell that information, I don't know. Maybe there is a reason that that has not ever been officially explained, and why we're all sitting here having to guess if this is from the same day or not. I would think that would be helpful to put out into the ether of people trying to figure out what the hell's going on here, since they haven't solved anything in this yet.
Well, I think it's two different ways that was stored. In other words, there's the picture and photographic data, and separate from that are timestamps and things like that. It's two different ways. And I'll tell you who said this and has been saying it, I believe at least twice, for what it's worth, is Nanos. He has said over and over, we don't have the timestamps. So... And I tend to believe that because of how it's stored. You know how it's separate? Like, you get your picture, but then you can reset the time on it, right? I can put any time I want on my system. I can tell it, you're going to say whatever time I pick. Mm-hmm. I set my system up that way. So time is separate from pictures.
But this was accessed from the cloud, this data. So, I mean, that's the thing to me on that. Like, there, when you put the data in, the data is going to show you, and even if your clock is off, you're going to see a separation on time if there's a separation on time. It doesn't seem like that's the rocket science portion of this to determine if these are from 2 days apart or 3 days, whatever the hell is, a week apart, or all at the same time. You would be able to see how it's stored on the server, when it came in, when it logged. It's there. It's data. I don't see a world in which that element is not somehow stamped onto wherever they were able to pull this out of. You know, it's not like, well, we're going to go into the big room with the computers, Bill, and it's on ticker tape, and then we're going to, like, that's not how this is a file. That it would be there.
I know what you're saying, and that's the whole reason, you know, for being suspect with these being two different days, because how are they digging through? And I think it's on my part, the lack of understanding. Like, I need to find a Google expert, not an FBI agent, you know what I mean? That even works cyber, because they couldn't do it. They needed a Google expert to explain how possibly they could get this data. And now they've explained it, at least, you know, why they've explained it is that it's like an onion, and right, they peeled down and they were lucky to capture this. To your point, were they all right together, these images, or were some in this part of the onion and the other one way down here? That would answer, at least if there's a hiatus.
Yeah. I could certainly be wrong, but understanding how data is stored, I mean, it's just basic stuff. I don't get how they wouldn't have that information. I'm assuming they do. They just haven't revealed it, is my guess. I don't know. I mean, it adds to the confusion, the curiosity, and all of the questions that are in this case. So many questions on these letters, but we got more to get to on the Nancy Guthrie case. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we continue it. Now, here's another uncomfortable possibility. We've heard two things this week from various sources. One person's sources are telling them they're very close. Others are like, we're at a dead end. We're going to address both in two different segments here. First, we're going to talk about dead end, that nobody's close to anything. Howard Bloom's reporting in Airmail lays it out. Investigators themselves are scared. An early screw-up costs them the case. Suspects hauled in and let go. Every lead dead-ending. The task force crawling back to the ransom notes because they've got nothing better. Brian Enton's sources say the same thing. The kidnapper vanished as clearly as Nancy did. Jennifer Coffendaffer is with myself and Robin Drake to help break down this end of it. Let's talk about Howard Bloom's reporting from Airmail. Howard's been on the show. I think last time he was on, we were talking about Koberger.
Yeah,
but Bloom has reported the agents themselves are afraid an early mistake costs them any shot at solving this. Forget whether they're right. When investigators start saying that about their own case out loud, even anonymously, you guys are retired FBI agents. How do you read that? Let's start with you, Jen.
Well, look at where we're at. We're at 4.5 months. Again, I predicted a 6-month case very early on, only because the night situation there, trying to figure out where the vehicle was, knowing the IA time to sit there and watch and look, the analyst meaning watching and looking at all this footage that would have come in, the DNA issues that we knew very early on. They talked about 3 profiles in one, so we knew that that wasn't going to work. But then they had this rootless hair that the FBI acknowledged. That's one of the true pieces of information, data points that is, we've got that. So we know that that is always going to take months to analyze and to do IgG on, because that's the only way you can do it. We don't know what other DNA they have in there. And we don't even know if they have it, if it's really connected, or they just connected it in hopes of it being connected. So all these things, in other words, I'm not panicking. I'm never going to panic. But the 6-month mark is where I'm going to be scrunching my face more. I think a lot of this just takes time. Dead end. Nothing is at a dead end when you have roads. So there's all these roads that the FBI is going down and nothing telling us there's a dead end. Nothing. We've still got the pictures of Porch Guy. We've got the DNA. We've got the video footage that they should be going through. We've got all the hints that have come in. We've got the Bitcoin that could still lead to something. And then we've also got the IP addresses that led to those notes. So those aren't dead ends. Those are roads that are being traveled. So I think it's going to be solved. I don't believe there's dead ends. They're just frustrated because they're not getting where they want to go fast enough.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tony.
No, you go ahead. You got one, Robin?
My concern with everything is not concerned. I'm curious whether the internal confusion matches the external confusion, because if you have a good, strong leader that's leading the investigation, you can make sense of all the chaos that's going on and all the leads that are coming in, because like Jen's saying, if you got lots of leads coming in, there's still lots of things to be flushed out. But if you don't have someone with a lot of reps and experience about how to manage and triage properly, you're going to spin around and waste a lot of time just trying to figure out what to do next and what's this and who's saying this. I mean, literally what we're doing here is what I'm hoping that they're not doing there, because this is the most confusing thing I've ever seen we've ever covered. Because, and a large part of that is because no one seems to be taking lead in communication. No one's taking lead on what's truth and veracity here, what we should ignore, what we shouldn't ignore. I mean, whoever's in charge, and as I'm saying, whoever's in charge, because I really don't know, is letting the ether continually populate crap all over the place. You know, here's what would be really helpful for everyone following this. Someone in a position of knowing to say, this is not real, this is not real, this is not real. I'm just give us something to work with so we don't feel like I feel. And that is, if they're as confused as I am, they're screwed. That's what I'm hoping.
Is confusion part of the plan, though? Like for the public in general, or the potential people who did this, they feel like they're not onto them, that the FBI or the investigation is not anywhere close to them because there's just so much information everywhere, are they using that to their advantage in the investigative realm of this? So they don't realize that they're being tailed, if you will, in a kind of a metaphorical sort of sense.
Well, yes, I like that point, because that's why the FBI never comes out and says anything. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because then everybody's confused and quite frankly, the FBI could care less what the public thinks in this regard.
Yep,
they sure. really could care less. They're just, I mean, they watch it, they monitor, but they don't care. I'll tell you who does care are the local officials, because Nanos wants to get reelected. And that's why even Chief Fry, I love to compare these two cases, because they were very similar in terms of the amount of notoriety. And look at the difference and how Chief Fry came out at least weekly and would give his weekly update and say all these people are on the cleared list. And generally speaking, we're working hard. And I think that gives the community, that's who needs to care. The Bureau doesn't care. These guys need to care. And that's why every week he should set up, in my opinion, or have his PIO come out and give just an update like that. It doesn't have to be significant, but it should be something. That's my opinion.
I agree. Yeah, because it could be part of a strategy, because if there's so much noise, it helps to diffuse the fact that they're really close. And I get that's why I use that word. I love my word maybe, but I that's why I said I hope it's not as it appears, because if it does, they're it looks lost, but I know they're not. There's a lot of things to follow up on.
The cleared list, I want to talk about that for a second. And in no way am I insinuating that anybody who's on that cleared list has done anything wrong. But how often historically have we seen in investigations, and I don't know the answer to this, so I'm asking it, is how often is it you have a cleared list initially on an investigation, or maybe for quite some time, and the names on that cleared list sometimes fall off the cleared list. Maybe they're not cleared at a certain point. Maybe there's other information that comes to light that they're not so as clear as we thought they were initially. Again, I am not insinuating anybody here. I'm just more so throwing that into the ether of, does that happen?
I think it happens only, so again, I'm just going to go by experience when you're asking that question, thinking of specific cases.
Yeah.
And where I can think of it very specifically are in gang cases, where, for instance, we know that it's one of these, say, five or six characters. We think it's this one, and then we get better information and turn to another one because the information is stronger, right? Because their descriptions were alike. The availability to commit the crime was similar. The motive was similar, right? So I've seen it in that general context, but I've never seen it in something like this, where basically you're trying to figure out inner circle, like in a murder or in a kidnapping, inner circle out, and you clear. That is much easier than the times I know where we've had to go in a different direction.
All right. And I apologize, guys. So here's what I know a lot of our viewers have been saying, that TMZ put out another note recently, like today. Just found it. So if you want me to see want me to tell you what it contains?
Go for it.
Yeah. So they put it out 2 hours ago. It says so it came from the same individual who's been sending them multiple messages about Nancy Guthrie. So it's the same person, apparently. He says he knows who the kidnappers are and can lead the FBI directly to him. He's demanding one Bitcoin in exchange for that information. He claims only two people are directly involved in a kidnapping. He says he has video of Nancy Guthrie with the main kidnapper on what was probably her last day alive. He also claims to have names, addresses, and phone numbers of the people involved. The video is stored on the phone that is currently turned off and hidden in a secure secret location that is easy to find if you know to where to look. He provides a new Bitcoin address. Previous one he gave them is no longer working. There you go. That's what just came in 2 hours ago.
Boom. And it's hidden in a box of Rice Krispies. The coin is the is the prize that you get out of it. I mean,
TMZ said they forwarded it to the FBI.
Good. I mean, what do you think? It sounds like it's somebody who's communicated with TMZ quite a bit, but does that mean anything?
You know, that I need to look at that and
digest more. I know.
Spicy Janet.
I got to digest it more, definitely to look at it. And I saw that coming up in bold, which I appreciate whatever viewer you know, pointed that out. Yeah. And thanks for following up, because I was side-eyeing it going, oh, great, what note now?
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I was researching.
Yeah.
And then I saw you over there and I said, I bet he's researching that note.
So and I couldn't even go through it. So AI didn't even have it scraped up yet. I actually had to go to TMZ's website, which gave a YouTube link. Then I gave the YouTube link to my AI to synthesize it down. So that's what I was doing. So I apologize for being distracted.
No, it was great. No, it was great. You know, this is the thing. People want TMZ. They say this, they say that. TMZ is who at least initially was communicated with. Everybody says, well, who would do that? This happens in wrench attacks by proxies, by the way. And it happens because you want to put pressure on that family to come up with the money. Things are changing, you know. That's the thing. I think everybody needs to open. This is an example of a case that is so different from anything any of us have ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And it is.
And maybe that is the reason. Yeah, I mean, that's probably the reality of a lot of this, because a lot of we're looking back going, well, historically, this hasn't happened. Yeah, I mean, historically, you know, things change. And I think we're at the precipice of a big change in how a lot of these things take place. I'm honestly a little bit surprised that there hasn't been any sort of AI, you know, images come out going, see, we have her or something. And people are like, oh, yeah, this is, I mean, I don't want to put that in the ether, but who knows what could happen soon.
And one more thing I just want to put out there. And for as I didn't know, I looked it up for everyone listening to. And the value of one Bitcoin today is about $93,000. That's what they're asking for.
Yeah.
Wow, it went up $30,000 since a couple days.
And next week it could be down 30. I mean, that thing that goes so quickly. $152 is what was put into that Bitcoin account that they supposedly thought might actually lead to something. There's talk that's the Guthrie wanted to pay the full damn thing right away. Let's talk about that for a second, because I know that's a point of contention with a lot of folks. Was it a mistake that they didn't pay anything without any sort of proof of life? And I'm also wondering, why the hell $152? What an odd amount of money to throw into that wallet if you're going to tickle the wire. I mean, it's like, if you're going to have a mouse trap, you got to put cheese on it. You don't just put the trap out. It feels like that's kind of what happened here. What was that, a misstep on the part of whoever is behind that with the FBI? Or, you know, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. What's your thoughts?
I truly think that wasn't to do anything other than to see if it operated and worked. And if they did Bitcoin transfer, that it would work. The amount is really odd. I had always heard 300. Where are you hitting 152 from? Did TMZ say 152?
That I got yesterday or 2 days ago when I was on with Nancy Grace.
I think 152. Well, if you think about it, if it's an odd number, it'll be easier to trace if someone takes the entire amount. I mean, how many transfers of Bitcoin at 150, or well, any transfer of anything at $152?
If you know that this stuff can be traced, which it can to a certain extent, you're not going to risk your existence on $152. I mean, at least make it something that somebody's going to have a little temptation, have a couple beverages and go, yeah, I think I'm going to try and collect that 40 grand or whatever is in there. Like, I could, if you make it like somewhat of a temptation, you're probably going to have a better chance of somebody trying to withdraw it. And that's either going to lead you to the killer or another opportunist. Either way, you get somebody.
More things that make you go, That's all it is. It's another, I don't have no idea.
Well, what killed me was hearing that TMZ was ready to cough up the money.
Yeah.
Another FBI agent on another show, and we both just said, oh my gosh, that's the dream. You know, the dream, you know, you want to do all these investigative things, and sometimes money stops you, especially when you're in the millions, right? And to have somebody want to do it, and I understand there was quid pro quo. He wants to do a documentary and follow the money and see how it all turned out. Fine. He's going to do that anyway.
Yep.
You know, it's not like that's going to stop him. I don't know. But then, you know, apparently, he came on air. He says this. He hadn't been talked to for a month. And then he said, as soon as he aired this, saying what I just said, that the FBI called him within 10 minutes. And said, the reason we just kind of colded you, we didn't really need that because, and this is segueing into your second part, Tony, sorry if I'm early.
You're good.
We're making headway.
Yeah. Are they making headway? That is, that's the question. And why would they reveal that to Harvey? Why? I mean, why reveal that to anybody? Why would you say that out loud, period? If you're going to admit this, but not that. I don't know. The whole damn thing. We're going to get into that next. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Be sure to weigh in there. Let's flip this completely. In the same week, their stuck stuff came out. Retired FBI agent Maureen O'Connell goes on Megyn Kelly's show and says her sources say they're closing in on Porch Guy, the masked man on Nancy's doorbell camera, and she put a 75% assuredness. It's her own conjecture. Everybody is certainly entitled to their own conjecture, but that's what she said, according to her sources. And then her conjecture said she feels it's about 75% that is accurate when pressed by Megyn. As soon as they ID him, she says, the floodgates open. So you got two former FBI agents, same case, same week, telling you opposite things. We have two FBI agents, same case, same week. And let's see if we're going to hear opposite things here. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, and Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to help us break it down. All right, confidence at 75%. You're both retired FBI special agents. She says she has some sources in there telling her that they're getting this close. What are the odds that that's accurate?
A couple of things. I couldn't understand what's at 75%. Is it 75% that they're getting closer to making an arrest?
I think her confidence level that they're going down a path that they're closing in on Porch Guy. She's about 75% sure, if I'm understanding her conjecture correctly, that they're getting close to closing in on Porch Guy.
So her assurity is 75%, not the okay.
I don't think that's from the FBI. That's her own interpretation of her source information.
I'm just going to be honest, and I have nothing against this woman.
Sure.
Never met her. Don't know anything about her, except former FBI came in around my similar time frame. I was confused with that 75%, so that bothered me. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily to that, and again, this is, again, with all due respect to her, I don't understand any FBI agent. I understand media because that's their job to find sources. I don't understand any FBI agent or any law enforcement person, retired or not retired, coming in and talking about sources. We all have sources. We all have people telling us things. And I never, just that's my personal mantra. I'm not going to talk about what somebody says about a case. Never. I keep it tight, and I don't. So I was just surprised. That's all I'm going to say. I was surprised,
sure. And
I was confused, and it doesn't match up with the other reporting, but that doesn't mean it's not accurate. I was just confused, and I was really surprised.
I'm so glad you said that, Jen, because first of all, I only put averages of percentages when I do research off of past cases. Like every time I say probabilities, it's always based on past research, not on conjecture or theories or anything else, you know, right now. And I'm so glad you also said that, Jen, because here I am sitting, you know, I'm retired FBI. This person's got sources. What am I doing wrong in my post-bureau career that I don't have sources that can tell me this shit? Because I got no idea who would have told me this stuff. Because like you said, no one talks like that. And here's the other thing too. You don't put your former colleagues, friends, and associates in that kind of compromising position to do that. It's really, really bad because we do internal leak investigations all the time. I was in units that did that. And the last thing in the world you want to do, because a bureau takes that extremely seriously, if you're ever caught giving information about an investigation to someone outside, I don't care if you're a retired bureau or not, you are screwing yourself pretty significantly. So first of all, to have someone willing to do that is one thing. And to be the type of person to ask for that information is another thing. So I'm in the world of maybe on that one, because I don't know where she came up with that number either.
I don't know. I mean, I get I get making a good headline, but at the end of the day, you know, people are interpreting these things, and you don't want to. I don't want to lead people down a wrong path or something. And I don't know Maureen either, so I'm in no way trying to say anything negative about her. I mean, it's a conjecture. Sometimes I think when you're live, maybe comes across, you know, as fact, or people absorb something as fact because it comes from someone with a history or a title, and then boom, oh, it must be true, or people misinterpret it as something that it's not. I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on there.
So I have a theory on that too. We've had this, and Jen, I'd be curious if you've had this too. Is where when you talk to friends and former colleagues, or even current colleagues that say they know someone or something, you'll get a temperature gauge on how they're feeling about a case, and that's typically what people are saying. Oh man, I got a good feeling about this one. And so she might be having a good feeling about it from talking to someone, and her good feelings from her past reps and past experience generally come in at that 3/4 glass half full kind of way, which gives a 75%. So my conjecture on that is most likely she was getting a temperature gauge from people she's talking to, not facts, data, and details of investigation, but she's interpreting that temperature gauge.
So I never ever talk about sources, but I'm going to give the general 100%. Context. Is in some situations, since I've been retired, I will reach out to the case agents and give them information that I found.
Oh, yeah. That way. Yeah. That way. Yes.
And then that case agent, in some instances, like I can think of one specifically, I said, I'm really concerned about this. I actually, in one case, I sent a video that I didn't think the Bureau had. Mm-hmm. And the supervisor, I sent it to him and he said, yeah, it looks bad. That's not who we think it is. I never at that time talked about it, released any of that, nothing. I'm doing it now. So generally, I mean, I've covered hundreds of cases. Nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. But those are the types of things. The thing I would never do after that conversation is get on air and say, my source says this isn't the right person. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't even occur to me. And then there, in that case and in other cases, there have been, you know, like I'll say, how are things going? Well, you know, you never ask specific questions. It's an unwritten rule. I'm so glad Robin said that too. Because when I was in the Bureau and my colleagues that brought me up in the Bureau retired, and many of them became PIs. And the last thing, even though you still go out with them, you still hang with them, you go to family things, the last thing they would ever do was corner me and say, hey, can you run this? Or, hey, what about this? It's an absolute unwritten rule. You're not trying to develop sources in that situation. So I was really, really taken aback at surprise.
It's the quickest way to ruin every single relationship you've ever had. And then, because you want to talk about destroying your personal brand, do that, because you don't think that's going to start resonating around how so-and-so on the outside talking that is a media's, you know, spokesperson or a contributor called me and they pressed me for information. That's going to spread like wildfire internally. You just totally tainted yourself about anyone ever want to talk to you again. It's so toxic. That's why you got, like Jen said, you know, you're going to have contacts, friends, associates. I mean, I still have some, and you know, which have reached out and thanked me for certain things I've said on air. Yeah, you know, thanked me for things I've said on air. And I was like, well, I'm glad I was helpful. And if I can be a resource, great. With the complete understanding, it would never, ever leak beyond my lips to anyone else. You know, I tell my wife, I really felt good. I did a little something here. That's as far as anything goes, because we take our sources and we take our, not even sources, we take our relationships we have with people, because that's the only thing the FBI really relies on to do things. And in actuality, is our relationships we can develop with people that they can trust us with whatever they tell us to not do them wrong or do them sides or harm them in any way. And so, yeah, I'm sorry, I get on the soapbox with that stuff.
Very, very different FBI than the one that you guys were in. It's like the whole mindset different with the next generation that's coming up here in terms of revealing information and sources and being part of the media landscape? I mean, is it really, I mean, obviously not that the rules have changed, but have people changed? And what the principles they have that they operate by, and of leaking things and not leaking things, are we in a place where it's become, you know, almost like a cancer to a certain extent, where so many people are doing this, so many people are affected in doing these sort of things, that it's become more of a norm and less of an oddball thing where things are leaking out? Obviously, there's always been leaks, but I guess, is the atmosphere, whatever has changed, I'm not trying to go down a political road here, but has the atmosphere changed to such an extent that this is just, it's a whole, you got like the minor league playing in the major leagues, and a lot of them are not up to par yet where they should be in terms of operations and what stays within the bureau and what gets out?
You know, I don't know. I just think everybody individually has to make their own decisions on that sort of thing. Like I said, I mean, that's just how I view things. I was just surprised. Let's just leave it at that.
I think agents are still agents, doing exactly what they've always done, regardless of directors. I mean, I know, Jen, you've been through a lot of different directors. So as I came under Louis Free, and then the whole slew from there. And people keep doing the same thing every day. From the people I've known and still know on the inside right now, it's tighter. I think it's tighter on leaks now than it's ever been, because people are afraid to talk. I mean, there's a lot of internal angst about even, I mean, there's again, very, very small sample size I have, but there's a little more fear about chatting too much right now than before, at least from my small optic.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. That's why I was just curious to get your guys' perspective on it. One more thing here. Let's talk about what we were talking about at the top of this segment. TMZ, Harvey Levin, saying that he talked to the FBI, and they've reiterated in so many words, we don't need your money, because Harvey and TMZ were saying, we'll tickle the wire if you guys won't. We'll put some money in there. And then TMZ calling them back very quickly saying, don't, we're good. We're getting close, in so many words. Why would they say that to Harvey Levin? Why would they tell that to Harvey Levin? Is that somebody with very loose lips? Is that Harvey interpreting things a certain way and releasing it the way Harvey releases things? I'm not trying to say anything negative about him. I'm just trying to understand why they would even tell him that, other than just, no, don't do that.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, the Bureau historically has kept everything tight to the vest, especially when it comes to media. We were all terrified. You cannot talk to the media. I've talked about the Red Shoe Award for putting your foot in your mouth if you even made any comment to the media, like you're on scene and they're crawling and then somebody says something and then you just an offhand comment, Red Shoe Award on your desk. So, you know, that's the Bureau I grew up in. It was always weird when I got into the media, because I remember going on, I was doing the Gabby Petito stuff with Brian, and he would ask me questions and I'd say, yes. Yes, we know the question. I'd say, no. And then I remember Marnie Hughes saying, can you expand on some of those? Because, and Robin, I want to know if this is your, at first it seemed so weird to even talk, even to express, And then you realize it's okay to analyze. It's okay to talk from your experience. It's okay to look at what we're looking at, as long as you don't release anything you know from within, right? From within, anything you're not supposed to. So anyway, just a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, it took brain adjusting. There's no doubt, you know, because you are in fear of sharing. You really are, because you don't know the repercussions of it, and you don't know how it's going to be misinterpreted, you know, because the intent is always good, but you don't know if there's going to be incongruency between what actually happens when the words come out, and so it's better just to say nothing. And that's why you keep it really close to the vest, because we take leaks, we used to be in the FBI, we take leaks, whether intentional or unintentional, extremely seriously. I mean, the OPR process, the Office of Professional Responsibility process inside the FBI is brutal. It's horrendous. It's horrible. And you avoid it at all costs. And so how do you avoid it? Shut up. That's what you just don't.
It's a no-brainer. And the last thing you want to do, which happened to a lot of people in my career, I saw it. The U.S. Attorney's Office had it, the Brady Giglio box. And this is the problem with that. They got put off of criminal matters and put into other matters where they would never have to testify, where they're more hidden, you know, doing other things because their ability to either be believed or they said something that was misunderstood, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Robin, I don't know how many you saw in your career. I probably because I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office so much. I mean, the U.S. Attorney's Office would be like, and I officed there for about 2 years, not even at the Bureau. I officed in the U.S. Attorney's Office. They would not even deal with some agents. And then the agency has to.
And then what they'll do is, I'm sorry, you're seeing how the sausage is made behind us. And then if you're considered ineffective as an agent because of that, they can take away a part of your salary, the availability pay, because if you can't be an active agent, then why are we giving you all the pay for this? So, poof, I mean, you'll take a, what is it, 30%, 25% hit for doing stuff like that. And that's even, so it's like, you might as well quit at that point. I mean, it's just, it's bad. That's why it's very rare.
A lot of coordinators.
coordinator. You become a coordinator.
But nevertheless, I mean, that's just, and so anyway.
One more quick one before we wrap up, and I'm not going to put you on the Megyn Kelly spot like she did to Maureen, where it's like, tell me the percentage you think. I'm not trying to knock Megyn, but we're not going to go outside, not according to the sausage factory, just according to you, according to just your own gut, based on everything that you've been seeing. Jen, not a percentage. Where do you think we're leaning here? Are we leaning closer to getting and closing in on this person, or is it still a big mystery to everybody? What's your conjecture?
I mean, I believe that they just have a longer time to go down this road. If Maureen ends up being right and next week there's an arrest, all I have to say is she had a great source. If this ends up going another several weeks or a month, then we'll know it wasn't a very good source. I'm just saying at the 6 month mark, I'm looking for something to be moving. So I think they're making it down these roads and they're just long roads. And I think the best road right now, likely the best road is those are the pictures, but they're the that's the road that is there is out of their control.
Sure.
The road that's in their control are these notes.
Robin, thoughts?
Yes. So I'm very glass half full on this right now, and here's why. Maureen, you know, 75% is what she's said. You know, regardless, I know we had a long discussion, you know, about how that came about, which is regardless, because if she has a good feeling about this, it comes from somewhere, whether it's her own thoughts and opinions or sources, doesn't matter. She has a good feeling. And when you combine that with a lot of noise that we have right now, noise means attention. Attention means more potential leads. And time is now on our side with solving this. It's not on, unfortunately, Nancy's side, but so I'm still half full on this.
Yeah. All right. That's, I think we'll wrap it up right there. Another week where we've, of course, solved another mystery. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your two cents as well. Jennifer Coffendaffer, Break the Case. Go check it out. Her podcast, wherever you get podcasts, and on YouTube. Go press subscribe and watch her in-depth coverage every single day on this. If you want to dive in far deeper, even than what you get here, Jen's got it on Break the Case. So go check that out. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. Go check this out. Leave a review on Amazon, also available on audiobook. Enjoy some great summer reading, if you will. All right, until next time, for Jen, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.